For my father, it is not fitting to enter your room. For myself, I have never even seen a cow give birth. My clumsy hands might mar the child. Someone from the great house now, where the slaves are always giving birth."
She had placed the chopsticks carefully down in an orderly heap upon the table, and she looked at him, and after a moment's looking, she said,
"When I return to that house, it will be with my son in my arms. I shall have a red coat on him, and red-flowered trousers, and on his head a hat with a small gilded Buddha sewn on the front, and on his feet tiger-faced shoes. And I will wear new shoes, and a new coat of black sateen, and I will go into the kitchen where I spent my days, and I will go into the great hall where the old one sits with her opium, and I will show myself and my son to all of them."
He had never heard so many words from her before. They came forth steadily and without break, albeit slowly, and he realized that she had planned this whole thing out for herself. When she had been working in the fields beside him, she had been planning all this out. How astonishing she was! He would have said that she had scarcely thought of the child, so stilly had she gone about her work day in and day out. And instead, she saw this child, born and fully clothed, and herself as his mother, in a new coat. He was, for once, without words himself. And he pressed the tobacco diligently into a ball between his thumb and forefinger, and picking up his pipe, he fitted the tobacco into the bowl.
"I suppose you will need some money," he said at last, with apparent gruffness.
"If you will give me 3 silver pieces, she said fearfully. "It is a great deal, but I have counted carefully, and I will waste no penny of it. I will make the cloth dealer give me the last inch to the foot."
Wang Long fumbled in his girdle. The day before he had sold a load and a half of reeds from the pond in the western field to the town market, and he had in his girdle a little more than she wished. He put the 3 silver dollars upon the table. Then, after a little hesitation, he added a 4th piece, which he had long kept by him on the chance of his wanting to gamble a little some morning at the tea-house, but he never did more than linger about the tables and look at the dice as they clattered upon the table, fearful lest he lose if he played. He usually ended by spending his spare hours in the town at the storyteller's booth, where one may listen to an old tale and pay no more than a penny into his bowl when it was passed about. "You had better take the other piece," he said, lighting his pipe between the words, blowing quickly at the paper spill to set it aflame. "You may as well make his coat of a small remnant of silk. After all, he is the first."
She did not at once take the money, but she stood looking at it, her face motionless. Then she said in a half-whisper, "It is the first time I have had silver money in my hand." Suddenly she took it and clenched it in her hand and hurried into the bedroom. Wang Long sat smoking, thinking of the silver as it had lain upon the table. It had come out of the earth, this silver, out of his earth that he ploughed and turned and spent himself upon. He took his life from this earth. Drop by drop, by his sweat, he wrung food from it, and from the food, silver. Each time before this that he had taken the silver out to give it to anyone, it had been like taking a piece of his life and giving it to someone carelessly. But now, for the first time, such giving was not pain. He saw not the silver in the alien hand of a merchant in the town. He saw the silver transmuted into something worth even more than itself, clothes upon the body of his son. And this strange woman of his, who worked about saying nothing, seeming to see nothing, she had first seen the child thus clothed.
She would have no one with her when the hour came. It came one night early, when the sun was scarcely set. She was working beside him in the harvest field. The wheat had borne and been cut, and the field flooded, and the young rice set. And now the rice bore harvest, and the ears were ripe and full after the summer rains and the warm ripening sun of early autumn. Together they cut the sheaves all day, bending and cutting with short-handled scythes. She had stooped stiffly because of the burden she bore, and she moved more slowly than he, so that they cut unevenly, his row ahead and hers behind.
She began to cut more and more slowly as noon wore on to afternoon and evening, and he turned to look at her with impatience. She stopped and stood up, then her scythe dropped. On her face was a new sweat, the sweat of a new agony.
"It is come," she said.
"I will go into the house. Do not come into the room until I call. Only bring me a newly peeled reed and slit it, that I may cut the child's life from mine." She went across the fields toward the house, as though there were nothing to come. And after he had watched her, he went to the edge of the pond in the outer field and chose a slim green reed and peeled it carefully and slit it on the edge of his scythe. The quick autumn darkness was falling then, and he shouldered his scythe and went home. When he reached the house, he found his supper hot on the table, and the old man eating. She had stopped in her labor to prepare them food. He said to himself that she was a woman such as is not commonly found. Then he went to the door of their room, and he called out, "Here is the reed." He waited, expecting that she would call out to him to bring it in to her, but she did not. She came to the door, and through the crack her hand reached out and took the reed. She said no word, but he heard her panting as an animal pants which has run for a long way. The old man looked up from his bowl to say, "Eat, or all will be cold." And then he said, "Do not trouble yourself, yet it will be a long time. I remember well when the first was born to me. It was dawn before it was over. Ah, me, to think that out of all the children I begot and your mother bore, one after the other, a score or so, I forget, only you have lived. You see why a woman must bear and bear." And then he said again, as though he had just thought of it newly, "By this time tomorrow I may be grandfather to a man-child." He began to laugh suddenly, and he stopped his eating and sat chuckling for a long time in the dusk of the room. But Wang Long stood listening at the door to those heavy animal pants. A smell of hot blood came through the crack, a sickening smell that frightened him. The panting of the woman within became quick and loud, like whispered screams, but she made no sound aloud. When he could bear no more and was about to break into the room, a thin, fierce cry came out, and he forgot everything. "Is it a man?" he cried importunately, forgetting the woman. The thin cry burst out again, wiry, insistent. "Is it a man?" he cried again. "Tell me at least this. Is it a man?" And the voice of the woman answered as faintly as an echo, "A man." He went and sat down at the table then. How quick it had all been! The food was long cold, and the old man was asleep on his bench, but how quick it had all been! He shook the old man's shoulder. "It is a man-child," he called triumphantly. "You are grandfather, and I am father." The old man woke suddenly and began to laugh as he had been laughing when he fell asleep.
"Yes, yes, of course," he cackled. "A grandfather, a grandfather."
And he rose and went to his bed, still laughing. Wang Long took up a bowl of cold rice and began to eat. He was very hungry all at once, and he could not get the food into his mouth quickly enough. In the room he could hear the woman dragging herself about, and the cry of the child was incessant and piercing.
"I suppose we shall have no more peace in this house now," he said to himself proudly.
When he had eaten all that he wished, he went to the door again, and she called to him to come in, and he went in. The odor of spilt blood still hung hot upon the air, but there was no trace of it except in the wooden tub. But into this she had poured water and had pushed it under the bed so that he could hardly see it. The red candle was lit, and she was lying neatly covered upon the bed. Beside her, wrapped in a pair of his old trousers, as the custom was in this part, lay his son. He went up, and for the moment there were no words in his mouth. His heart crowded up into his breast, and he leaned over the child to look at it. It had a round, wrinkled face that looked very dark, and upon its head the hair was long and damp and black. It had ceased crying and lay with its eyes tightly shut. He looked at his wife, and she looked back at him. Her hair was still wet with her agony, and her narrow eyes were sunken. Beyond this, she was as she always was. But to him she was touching, lying there. His heart rushed out to these two, and he said, not knowing what else there was that could be said, "Tomorrow I will go into the city and buy a pound of red sugar and stir it into boiling water for you to drink." And then looking at the child again, this burst forth from him so suddenly as though he had just thought of it. "We shall have to buy a good basketful of eggs and dye them all red for the village. Thus will everyone know I have a son." 4. The next day after the child was born, the woman rose as usual and prepared food for them, but she did not go into the harvest fields with Wang Long, and so he worked alone until after the noon hour. Then he dressed himself in his blue gown and went into the town. He went to the market and bought 50 eggs, not new laid, but still well enough, and costing a penny for one, and he bought red paper to boil in the water with them to make them red. Then, with the eggs in his basket, he went to the sweet shop, and there he bought a pound, and a little more, of red sugar, and saw it wrapped carefully into its brown paper, and under the straw string which held it, the sugar dealer slipped a strip of red paper, smiling as he did so. "It is for the mother of a newborn child, perhaps?"
"A firstborn son," said Wang Long proudly.
"Ah, good fortune," answered the man carelessly, his eye upon a well-dressed customer who had just come in. This he had said many times to others, even every day to someone, but to Wang Long it seemed special, and he was pleased with the man's courtesy, and he bowed and bowed again as he went from the shop. It seemed to him, as he walked into the sharp sunshine of the dusty street, that there was never a man so filled with good fortune as he. He thought of this at first with joy, and then, with a pang of fear. It did not do in this life to be too fortunate. The air and the earth were filled with malignant spirits who could not endure the happiness of mortals, especially of such as are poor. He turned abruptly into the candlemaker's shop, who sold incense also, and there he bought 4 sticks of incense, one for each person in his house. And with these 4 sticks he went into the small temple of the gods of the earth, and he thrust them into the cold ashes of the incense he had placed there before, he and his wife together. He watched the 4 sticks well lit, and then went homeward, comforted. These 2 small, protective figures sitting staidly under their small roof, what a power they had! And then, almost before one could realize anything, the woman was back in the fields beside him. The harvests were past, and the grain they beat out upon the threshing floor, which was also the dooryard to the house. They beat it out with flails, he and the woman together, and when the grain was flailed, they winnowed it, casting it up from great flat bamboo baskets into the wind, and catching the good grain as it fell, and the chaff blew away in a cloud with the wind. Then there were the fields to plant for winter wheat again, and when he had yoked the ox and ploughed the land, the woman followed behind with her hoe and broke the clods in the furrows. She worked all day now, and the child lay on an old torn quilt on the ground asleep. When it cried, the woman stopped and uncovered her bosom to the child's mouth, sitting flat upon the ground, and the sun beat down upon them both, the reluctant sun of late autumn that will not let go of the warmth of summer until the cold of the coming winter forces it. The woman and the child were as brown as the soil, and they sat there like figures made of earth. There was the dust of the fields upon the woman's hair and upon the child's soft black head. But out of the woman's great brown breast the milk gushed forth for the child, milk as white as snow. And when the child suckled at one breast, it flowed like a fountain from the other, and she let it flow. There was more than enough for the child, greedy though he was, life enough for many children, and she let it flow out carelessly, conscious of her abundance. There was always more and more. Sometimes she lifted her breast and let it flow out upon the ground to save her clothing, and it sank into the earth and made a soft, dark, rich spot in the field. The child was fat and good-natured and ate of the inexhaustible life his mother gave him. Winter came on, and they were prepared against it. There had been such harvests as never were before, and the small three-roomed house was bursting. From the rafters of the thatched roof hung strings and strings of dried onions and garlic, and about the middle room and in the old man's room and in their own room were mats made of reeds and twisted into the shapes of great jars, and these were filled full of wheat and rice. Much of this would be sold, but Wang Long was frugal, and he did not, like many of the villagers, spend his money freely at gambling or on foods too delicate for them, and so, like them, have to sell the grain at harvest when the price was low. Instead, he saved it and sold it when the snow came on the ground or at the new year when people in the towns will pay well for food at any price. His uncle was always having to sell his grain before it was even well ripened. Sometimes he even sold it standing in the field to save himself the trouble of harvesting and threshing to get a little ready cash. But then his uncle's wife was a foolish woman, fat and lazy and forever clamoring for sweet food and for this sort of thing and that and for new shoes bought in the town. Wang Lung's woman made all the shoes for himself and for the old man and for her own feet and the child's. He would not know what to make of it if she wished to buy shoes. There was never anything hanging from the rafters in his uncle's crumbling old house. But in his own, there was even a leg of pork which he had bought from his neighbor Ching when he killed his pig that looked as though it were sickening for a disease. The pig had been caught early before it lost flesh, and the leg was a large one, and Olan had salted it thoroughly and hung it to dry. There were, as well, two of their own chickens killed and drawn and dried, with the feathers on and stuffed with salt inside. In the midst of all this plenty, they sat in the house, therefore, when the winds of winter came out of the desert to the northeast of them, winds bitter and biting. Soon the child could almost sit alone. They had had a feast of noodles, which mean long life, on his month birthday, when he was a full moon of age, and Wang Lung had invited those who came to his wedding feast, and to each he had given around 10 of the red eggs he had boiled and dyed. And to all those who came from the village to congratulate him, he gave 2 eggs. And everyone envied him, his son, a great fat moony-faced child with high cheekbones like his mother. Now, as winter came on, he sat on the quilt placed on the earthen floor of the house instead of upon the fields. And they opened the door to the south for light, and the sun came in, and the wind on the north beat in vain against the thick earthen wall of the house. The leaves were soon torn from the date tree on the threshold and from the willow trees and the peach trees near the fields. Only the bamboo leaves clung to the bamboos in the sparse clump to the east of the house, and even though the wind wrenched the stems double, the leaves clung. With this dry wind, the wheat seed that lay in the ground could not sprout, and Wang Long waited anxiously for the rains. And then the rains came suddenly, out of a still gray day, when the wind fell and the air was quiet and warm. And they all sat in the house, filled with well-being, watching the rain fall full and straight and sink into the fields about the dooryard and drip from the thatched ends of the roof above the door. The child was amazed and stretched out his hands to catch the silver lines of the rain as it fell, and he laughed, and they laughed with him. And the old man squatted on the floor beside the child and said, "There is not another child like this in 12 villages. Those brats of my brother notice nothing before they walk." And in the fields the wheat seed sprouted and pushed spears of delicate green above the wet brown earth. At a time like this there was visiting, because each farmer felt that for once heaven was doing the work in the fields, and their crops were being watered without their backs being broken for it, carrying buckets to and fro, slung upon a pole across their shoulders. And in the morning they gathered at this house and that, drinking tea here and there, going from house to house, barefoot across the narrow path between the fields, under great oiled paper umbrellas. The women stayed at home and made shoes and mended clothes, if they were thrifty, and thought of preparations for the feast of the new year. But Wang Long and his wife were not frequent at visiting. There was no house in the village of small scattered houses, of which theirs was one of a half dozen, which was so filled with warmth and plenty as their own. And Wang Long felt that if he became too intimate with the others, there would be borrowing. New Year was coming, and who had all the money he wanted for the new clothes and the feasting? He stayed in his house, and while the woman mended and sewed, he took his rakes of split bamboo and examined them, and where the string was broken he wove in new string made of hemp he grew himself, and where a prong was broken out he drove in cleverly a new bit of bamboo. And what he did for the farm implements, his wife Olan did for the house implements. If an earthen jar leaked, she did not, as other women did, cast it aside and talk of a new one. Instead, she mixed earth and clay and welded the crack and heated it slowly, and it was as good as new. They sat in their house, therefore, and they rejoiced in each other's approval, although their speech was never anything more than scattered words, such as these. "Did you save the seed from the large squash for the new planting?" Or, "We will sell the wheat straw and burn the bean stalks in the kitchen." Or perhaps rarely Wang Long would say, "This is a good dish of noodles." And Olan would answer in deprecation, "It is good flour we have this year from the fields." From the produce, Wang Long, in this good year, had a handful of silver dollars, over and above what they needed, and these he was fearful of keeping in his belt, or of telling any, except the woman, what he had. They plotted where to keep the silver, and at last the woman cleverly dug a small hole in the inner wall of their room behind the bed, and into this Wang Long thrust the silver, and with a clod of earth she covered the hole, and it was as though there was nothing there. But to both Wang and Olan it gave a sense of secret richness and reserve. Wang Long was conscious that he had money more than he need spend, and when he walked among his fellows, he walked at ease with himself and with all. 5. The new year approached, and in every house in the village there were preparations. Wang Long went into town to the candlemaker's shop, and he bought squares of red paper on which were brushed in gilt ink the letter for happiness, and some with the letter for riches, and these squares he pasted upon his farm utensils to bring him luck in the new year. Upon his plough, and upon the ox's yoke, and upon the two buckets in which he carried his fertilizer and his water, upon each of these he pasted a square. And then upon the doors of his house he pasted long strips of red paper brushed with mottoes of good luck, and over his doorway he pasted a fringe of red paper cunningly cut into a flower pattern and very finely cut. And he bought red paper to make new dresses for the gods, and this the old man did cleverly enough for his old shaking hands, and Wang Long took them and put them upon the two small gods in the temple to the earth, and he burned a little incense before them for the sake of the new year. And for his house he bought also two red candles to burn on the eve of the year, upon the table under the picture of a god, which was pasted on the wall of the middle room above where the table stood. And Wang Lung went again into the town, and he bought pork fat and white sugar. And the woman rendered the fat smooth and white, and she took rice flour, which they had ground from their own rice, between their millstones, to which they could yoke the ox when they needed to do so, and she took the fat and the sugar, and she mixed and kneaded rich New Year's cakes, called moon cakes, such as were eaten in the house of Huang. When the cakes were laid out upon the table in strips ready for heating, Wang Long felt his heart fit to burst with pride. There was no other woman in the village able to do what his had done, to make cakes such as only the rich ate at the feast. In some of the cakes she had put strips of little red haws and spots of dried green plums, making flowers and patterns. "It is a pity to eat these," said Wang Long. The old man was hovering about the table, pleased as a child might be pleased with the bright colors. He said, "Call my brother, your uncle, and his children. Let them see." But prosperity had made Wang Long cautious. One could not ask hungry people only to see cakes. "It is ill luck to look at cakes before the new year," he replied hastily. And the woman, her hands all dusty with the fine rice flour and sticky with the fat, said, "Those are not for us to eat, beyond one or two of the plain ones for guests to taste. We are not rich enough to eat white sugar and lard. I am preparing them for the old mistress at the great house. I shall take the child on the second day of the new year and carry the cakes for a gift."
Then the cakes were more important than ever. And Wang Lung was pleased that to the great hall where he had stood with so much timidity and in such poverty, his wife should now go as visitor carrying his son dressed in red and cakes made as these were with the best flour and sugar and lard. All else at that new year sank into insignificance beside this visit. His new coat of black cotton cloth which Olan had made when he put it on only made him say to himself, "I shall wear it when I take them to the gate of the great house." He even bore carelessly the first day of the new year, when his uncle and his neighbors came crowding into the house to wish his father and himself well, all boisterous with food and drink. He had himself seen to it that the colored cakes were put away into the basket, lest he might have to offer them to common men, although he found it very hard when the plain white ones were praised for their flavor of fat and sugar, not to cry out, "You should see the colored ones!" But he did not. For more than anything, he wished to enter the great house with pride. Then on the second day of the new year, when it was the day for women to visit each other, the men having eaten and drunk well the day before, they rose at dawn, and the woman dressed the child in his red coat and in the tiger-faced shoes she had made, and she put on his head, freshly shaven by Wang Lung himself on the last day of the old year, the crownless red hat with the small gilt Buddha sewed on front, and she set him upon the bed. Then Wang Lung dressed himself quickly while his wife combed out afresh her long black hair and knotted it with the brass pin washed with silver which he had bought for her, and she put on her new coat of black that was made from the same piece as his own new robe, 24 feet of good cloth for the two, and 2 feet of cloth thrown in for good measure, as the custom is at cloth shops. Then, he carrying the child and she the cakes in the basket, they set out on the path across the fields, now barren with winter. Then Wang Lung had his reward at the great gate of the house of Huang, for when the gateman came to the woman's call, he opened his eyes at all he saw, and he twirled the 3 long hairs on his mole and cried out, "Ah, Wang the farmer, 3 this time instead of 1. And then, seeing the new clothes they all wore, and the child who was a son, he said further, "One has no need to wish you more fortune this year than you have had in the last." Wang Lung answered negligently, as one speaks to a man who is scarcely an equal, "Good harvests, good harvests." And he stepped with assurance inside the gate. The gateman was impressed with all he saw, and he said to Wang Lung, "Do you sit within my wretched room while I announce your woman and son within." And Wang Lung stood watching them go across the court, his wife and his son, bearing gifts to the head of a great house. It was all to his honor, and when he could no longer see them, when they had dwindled down the long vista of the courts, one inside the other, and had turned at last wholly out of sight, he went into the gateman's house, and there he accepted, as a matter of course, from the gateman's pockmarked wife, the honorable seat to the left of the table in the middle room, and he accepted, with only a slight nod, the bowl of tea which she presented to him, and he set it before him and did not drink of it, as though it were not good enough in quality of tea leaves for him. It seemed a long time before the gateman returned, bringing back again the woman and child. Wang Lung looked closely at the woman's face for an instant, trying to see if all were well, for he had learned now, from that impassive, square countenance, to detect small changes, at first invisible to him. She wore a look of heavy content, however, and at once he became impatient to hear her tell of what had happened in those courts of the ladies into which he could not go, now that he had no business there. With short bows, therefore, to the gateman and to his pockmarked wife, he hurried Olan away, and he took into his own arms the child who was asleep and lying all crumpled in his new coat.
"Well?" he called back to her over his shoulder as she followed him. For once he was impatient with her slowness. She drew a little nearer to him and said in a whisper, "I believe, if one should ask me, that they are feeling a pinch this year in that house." She spoke in a shocked tone, as one might speak of gods being hungry. "What do you mean?" said Wang Long, urging her. But she would not be hastened. Words were, to her, things to be caught one by one, and released with difficulty.
"The ancient mistress wore the same coat this year as last. I have never seen this happen before. And the slaves had no new coats."
And then after a pause she said, "I saw not one slave with a new coat like mine." And then after a while she said again, "As for our son, there was not even a child among the concubines of the old master himself to compare to him in beauty and in dress."
A slow smile spread over her face, and Wang Lung laughed aloud, and he held the child tenderly against him. How well he had done! How well he had done! And then, as he exulted, he was smitten with fear. What foolish thing was he doing, walking like this under an open sky with a beautiful man-child for any evil spirit passing by chance through the air to see? He opened his coat hastily and thrust the child's head into his bosom, and he said in a loud voice, "What a pity our child is a female, whom no one could want, and covered with smallpox as well. Let us pray it may die."
"Yes, yes,"
said his wife as quickly as she could, understanding dimly what a thing they had done. And being comforted with these precautions they had now taken, Wang Lung once more urged his wife,
"Did you find out why they are poorer?" "I had but a moment for private talk with the cook under whom I worked before," she replied. "But she said, 'This house cannot stand forever with all the young lords, five of them, spending money like wastewater in foreign parts, and sending home woman after woman as they weary of them,
and the old lord living at home adding a concubine or two each year, and the old mistress eating enough opium every day to fill two shoes with gold.'"
"Do they indeed?" murmured Wang Long, spellbound.
"Then the third daughter is to be married in the spring," continued Olan, "and her dowry is a prince's ransom, and enough to buy an official seat in a big city. Her clothes she will have nothing but the finest satins with special patterns woven in Suchao and Hangchao, and she will have a tailor sent from Shanghai with his retinue of under-tailors, lest she find her clothes less fashionable than those of the women in foreign parts."
"Whom will she marry, then, with all this expense?"
said Wang Long, struck with admiration and horror at such pouring out of wealth.
"She is to marry the second son of a Shanghai magistrate," said the woman.
And then, after a long pause, she added, "They must be getting poorer, for the old mistress herself told me they wish to sell land, some of the land to the south of the house just outside the city wall, where they have always planted rice each year because it is good land and easily flooded from the moat around the wall."
"Sell their land," repeated Wang Lung, convinced. "Then indeed are they growing poor. Land is one's flesh and blood."
He pondered for a while,
and suddenly a thought came to him, and he smote the side of his head with his palm. "What have I not thought of?" he cried, turning to the woman. "We will buy the land."
They stared at each other, he in delight, she in stupefaction.
"But the land, she stammered. "I will buy it," he cried in a lordly voice. "I will buy it from the great house of Huang."
"It is too far away," she said in consternation. "We would have to walk half the morning to reach it."
"I will buy it," he repeated peevishly, as he might repeat a demand to his mother who had crossed him.
"It is a good thing to buy land," she said pacifically. "It is better, certainly, than putting money into a mud wall. But why not a piece of your uncle's land? He is clamoring to sell that strip near to the western field we now have."
"That land of my uncle's," said Wang Lung loudly, "I would not have it. He has been dragging a crop out of it in this way and that for 20 years, and not a bit has he put back of manure or bean cake. The soil is like lime. No, I will buy Huang's land."
He said Huang's land as casually as he might have said Qing's land. Qing, who was his farmer neighbor. He would be more than equal to these people in the foolish, great, wasteful house. He would go with silver in his hand, and he would say plainly, "I have money. What is the price of the earth you wish to sell?" Before the old lord he heard himself saying, and to the old lord's agent, "Count me as anyone else. What is the fair price? I have it in my hand." And his wife, who had been a slave in the kitchens of that proud family, she would be wife to a man who owned a piece of land that for generations had made the house of Huang great. It was as though she felt his thought, for she suddenly ceased her resistance, and she said, "Let it be bought. After all, rice land is good, and it is near the moat, and we can get water every year, it is sure." And again the slow smile spread over her face, the smile that never lightened the dullness of her narrow black eyes, and after a long time she said, "Last year this time I was slave in that house." And they walked on, silent, with the fullness of this thought. 6. This piece of land which Wang Long now owned was a thing which greatly changed his life. At first, after he had dug the silver from the wall and taken it to the great house, after the honor of speaking as an equal to the old lord's equal was past, he was visited with a depression of spirit which was almost regret. When he thought of the hole in the wall, now empty, that had been filled with silver he need not use, he wished that he had his silver back. After all, this land, it would take hours of labor again. And, as Olan said, it was far away, more than a li, which is a third of a mile. And again, the buying of it had not been quite so filled with glory as he had anticipated. He had gone too early to the great house, and the old lord was still sleeping. True, it was noon, but when he said in a loud voice, "Tell his old honor I have important business. Tell him money is concerned," the gateman had answered positively, "All the money in the world will not tempt me to wake the old tiger. He sleeps with his new concubine, Peach Blossom, whom he has had but 3 days. It is not worth my life to waken him." And then he added somewhat maliciously, pulling at the hairs on his maul, "And do not think that silver will waken him. He has had silver under his hand since he was born." In the end, then, it had had to be managed with the old lord's agent, an oily scoundrel whose hands were heavy with the money that stuck to them in passing. So it seemed sometimes to Wang Long that, after all, the silver was more valuable than the land. One could see silver shining. Well, but the land was his. He set out one gray day in the second month of the new year to look at it. None knew yet that it belonged to him, and he walked out to see it alone, a long square of heavy black clay that lay stretched beside the moat encircling the wall of the town. He paced the land off carefully, 300 paces lengthwise and 120 across. 4 stones still marked the corners of the boundaries, stones set with the great seal character of the House of Huang. Well, he would have that changed. He would pull up the stones later, and he would put his own name there. Not yet, for he was not ready for people to know that he was rich enough to buy land from the great house, but later, when he was more rich, so that it did not matter what he did. And looking at that long square of land, he thought to himself, "To those at the great house it means nothing, this handful of earth, but to me it means how much." Then he had a turn of his mind, and he was filled with a contempt for himself that a small piece of land should seem so important. Why, when he had poured out his silver proudly before the agent, the man had scraped it up carelessly in his hands and said, "Here is enough for a few days of opium for the old lady, at any rate." And the wide difference that still lay between him and the great house seemed suddenly impassable as the moat full of water in front of him, and as high as the wall beyond, stretching up straight and hoary before him. He was filled with an angry determination then, and he said to his heart that he would fill that hole with silver again and again until he had bought from the House of Huang enough land so that this land would be less than an inch in his sight. And so this parcel of land became to Wang Long a sign and a symbol. Spring came with blustering winds and torn clouds of rain, and for Wang Long the half-idle days of winter were plunged into long days of desperate labor over his land. The old man looked after the child now, and the woman worked with the man from dawn until sunset flowed over the fields. And when Wang Long perceived one day that again she was with child, his first thought was of irritation that during the harvest she would be unable to work. He shouted at her, irritable with fatigue, "So you have chosen this time to breed again, have you?" She answered stoutly, "This time it is nothing. It is only the first that is hard." Beyond this, nothing was said of the second child, from the time he noticed its growth swelling her body, until the day came in autumn, when she laid down her hoe one morning and crept into the house. He did not go back that day, even for his noon meal, for the sky was heavy with thunderclouds, and his rice lay dead ripe for gathering into sheaves. Later, before the sun set, she was back beside him, her body flattened, spent, but her face silent and undaunted. His impulse was to say, "For this day you have had enough. Go and lie upon your bed." But the aching of his own exhausted body made him cruel, and he said to himself that he had suffered as much with his labor that day as she with her childbirth, and so he only asked between the strokes of his scythe, "Is it male or female?" She answered calmly, "It is another male." They said nothing more to each other, but he was pleased, and the incessant bending and stooping seemed less arduous, and working on until the moon rose above a bank of purple clouds, they finished the field and went home. After his meal, and after he had washed his sunburnt body in cool water and had rinsed his mouth with tea, Wang Long went in to look at his second son. Olan had lain herself upon the bed after the cooking of the meal, and the child lay beside her, a fat, placid child. Well enough, but not so large as the first one. Wang Long looked at him, and then went back to the middle room, well content. Another son, and another each year. One could not trouble with red eggs every year. It was enough to do it for the first. Sons every year. The house was full of good fortune. This woman brought him nothing but good fortune. He shouted to his father, "Now, old one! With another grandson, we shall have to put the big one in your bed." The old man was delighted. He had for a long time been desiring this child to sleep in his bed and warm his chilly old flesh with the renewal of young bones and blood, but the child would not leave his mother. Now, however, staggering in with feet still unsteady with babyhood, he stared at this new child beside his mother, and seeming to comprehend with his grave eyes that another had his place, he allowed himself, without protest, to be placed in his grandfather's bed. And again the harvests were good, and Wang Long gathered silver from the selling of his produce, and again he hid it in the wall. But the rice he reaped from the land of the Huangs brought him twice as much as that from his own rice land. The earth of that piece was wet and rich, and the rice grew on it as weeds grow where they are not wanted. And everyone knew now that Wang Long owned this land, and in his village there was talk of making him the head. 7. Wang Long's uncle began at this time to become the trouble which Wang Long had surmised from the beginning that he might be. This uncle was the younger brother of Wang Long's father, and by all the claims of relationship he might depend upon Wang Long if he had not enough for himself and his family. So long as Wang Long and his father were poor and scantily fed, the uncle made muster to scratch about on his land and gather enough to feed his 7 children and his wife and himself. But once fed, none of them worked. The wife would not stir herself to sweep the floor of their hut, nor did the children trouble to wash the food from their faces. It was a disgrace that as the girls grew older and even to marriageable age, they still ran about the village street and left uncombed their rough, sun-browned hair, and sometimes even talked to men. Wang Long, meeting his oldest girl cousin thus one day, was so angered for the disgrace done to his family that he dared to go to his uncle's wife and say, "Now, who will marry a girl like my cousin, whom any man may look on?
She has been marriageable these 3 years, and she runs about, and today I saw an idle lout on the village street lay his hand on her arm, and she answered him only with brazen laughter. His uncle's wife had nothing active in her body except her tongue, and this she now loosed upon Wang Long.
"Well, and who will pay for the dowry, and for the wedding, and for the middleman's fees? It is all very well for those to talk who have more land than they know what to do with, and who can yet go and buy more land from the great families with their spare silver. But your uncle is an unfortunate man, and he has been so from the first. His destiny is evil, and through no fault of his own, heaven wills it. Where others can produce good grain, for him the seed dies in the ground, and nothing but weeds spring up. And this though he break his back."
She fell into loud, easy tears and began to work herself up into a fury. She snatched at her knot of hair on the back of her head and tore down the loose hairs about her face, and she began to scream freely.
"It is something you do not know, to have an evil destiny. Where the fields of others bear good rice and wheat, ours bear weeds. Where the houses of others stand for 100 years, the earth itself shakes under ours, so that the walls crack. Where others bear men, I, although I conceive a son, will yet give birth to a girl. Ah, evil destiny!"
She shrieked aloud, and the neighbor women rushed out of their houses to see and to hear. Wang Long stood stoutly, however, and would finish what he came to say. "Nevertheless," he said, "although it is not for me to presume to advise the brother of my father, I will say this. It is better that a girl be married away while she is yet virgin. And who ever heard of a bitch dog who was allowed on the streets who did not give birth to a litter?"
Having spoken thus plainly, he went away to his own house and left his uncle's wife screaming. He had it in his mind to buy more land this year from the house of Huang, and more land year after year as he was able, and he dreamed of adding a new room to his house. And it angered him that, as he saw himself and his sons rising into a landed family, this shiftless brood of his cousins should be running loose, bearing the same name as his own. The next day his uncle came to the field where he was working. Olan was not there, for 10 moons had passed since the second child was born, and a third birth was close upon her. And this time she was not so well, and for a handful of days she had not come to the fields, and so Wang Long worked alone. His uncle came slouching along a furrow, his clothes never properly buttoned about him, but caught together and held insecurely with his girdle, so that it always seemed that if a gust of wind blew at him he might suddenly stand naked. He came to where Wang Long was, and he stood in silence while Wang Long hoed a narrow line beside the broad beans he was cultivating. At last Wang Long said maliciously and without looking up, "I ask your pardon, my uncle, for not stopping in my work. These beans must, if they are to bear, as you know, be cultivated twice and thrice. Yours, doubtless, are finished. I am very slow, a poor farmer, never finishing my work in time to rest." His uncle understood perfectly Wang Long's malice, but he answered smoothly,
"I am a man of evil destiny. This year, out of 20 seed beans, one came up. And in such a poor growth as that, there is no use in putting the hoe down. We shall have to buy beans this year if we eat them."
And he sighed heavily.
Wang Long hardened his heart. He knew that his uncle had come to ask something of him. He put his hoe down into the ground with a long, even movement, and with great care, breaking up the tiniest clod in the soft earth, already well cultivated. The bean plants stood erect in thrifty order, casting, as they stood, little fringes of clear shadow in the sunshine. At last his uncle began to speak.
"The person in my house has told me," he said, "of your interest in my worthless, oldest slave creature. It is wholly true what you say. You are wise for your years. She should be married. She is 15 years old, and for these 3 or 4 years could have given birth. I am terrified constantly lest she conceive by some wild dog and bring shame to me and to our name. Think of this happening in our respectable family, to me, the brother of your own father."
Wang Long put his hoe down hard into the soil.
He would have liked to have spoken plainly. He would have liked to have said, "Why do you not control her, then? Why do you not keep her decently in the house and make her sweep and clean and cook and make clothes for the family?" But one cannot say these things to an older generation. He remained silent, therefore, and hoed closely about a small plant, and he waited.
"If it had been my good destiny," continued his uncle mournfully, "to have married a wife as your father did, one who could work and at the same time produce sons, as your own does also, instead of a woman like mine who grows nothing but flesh and gives birth to nothing but females, and that one idle son of mine who is less than a male for his idleness, I too might have been rich now, as you are. Then might I have willingly, would I have shared my riches with you. Your daughters I would have wed to good men. Your son would I have placed in a merchant shop as apprentice, and willingly paid the fee of guarantee. Your house would I have delighted to repair, and you and I would have fed with the best I had, you and your father and your children, for we are of one blood."
Wang Lung answered shortly, "You know I am not rich. I have the 5 mouths to feed now, and my father is old and does not work, and still he eats, and another mouth is being born into my house at this very moment, for aught I know." His uncle replied shrilly,
"You are rich! You are rich! You have bought the land from the great house at the gods know what heavy price. Is there another in the village who could do this thing?"
At this, Wang Lung was goaded to anger. He flung down his hoe, and he shouted suddenly, glaring at his uncle, "If I have a handful of silver, it is because I work, and my wife works, and we do not, as some do, sit idling over a gambling table, or gossiping on doorsteps never swept, letting the fields grow to weeds, and our children go half-fed." The blood flew into his uncle's yellow face, and he rushed at his nephew and slapped him vigorously on both cheeks.
"Now that," he cried, "for speaking so to your father's generation! Have you no religion, no morals, that you are so lacking in filial conduct? Have you not heard it said that in the sacred edicts it is commanded that a man is never to correct an elder?"
Wang Lung stood sullen and immovable, conscious of his fault, but angry to the bottom of his heart against this man who was his uncle.
"I will tell your words to the whole village!"
screamed his uncle in a high, cracked voice of fury.
"Yesterday you attack my house and call aloud in the streets that my daughter is not a virgin. Today you reproach me, who, if your father passes on, must be as your own father to you. Now may my daughters all not be virgins, but not from one of them would I hear such talk."
And he repeated over and over,
"I will tell it to the village, I will tell it to the village,"
until at last Wang Lung said unwillingly, "What do you want me to do?" It touched his pride that this matter might indeed be called out before the village. After all, it was his own flesh and blood. His uncle changed immediately. Anger melted out of him. He smiled, and he put his hand on Wang Lung's arm.
"Ah, I know you. Good lad," he said softly. "Your old uncle knows you. You are my son. Son, a little silver in this poor old palm, say 10 pieces, or even 9, and I could begin to have arrangements with a matchmaker for that slave of mine. Ah, you are right. It is time. It is time."
He sighed and shook his head, and he looked piously to the sky. Wang Lung picked up his hoe and threw it down again. "Come to the house," he said shortly. "I do not carry silver on me like a prince." And he strode ahead, bitter beyond speech, because some of the good silver with which he had planned to buy more land was to go into this palm of his uncle's, from whence it would slip onto the gambling table before night fell. He strode into the house, brushing out of his way his 2 small sons, who played naked in the warm sunshine about the threshold. His uncle, with easy good nature, called to the children and took from some recess in his crumpled clothing a copper coin for each child. He pressed the small, fat, shining bodies to him, and putting his nose into their soft necks, he smelled of the sun-browned flesh with easy affection.
"Ah, you are 2 little men, he said,
clasping one in either arm.
But Wang Lung did not pause. He went into the room where he slept with his wife and the last child. It was very dark, coming in as he did from the outer sunshine, and except for the bar of light from the hole he could see nothing. But the smell of warm blood which he remembered so well filled his nostrils, and he called out sharply, "What now? Has your time come?" The voice of his wife answered from the bed more feebly than he had ever heard her speak.
"It is over once more. It is only a slave this time, not worth mentioning."
Wang Lung stood still. A sense of evil struck him. A girl. A girl was causing all this trouble in his uncle's house. Now a girl had been born into his house as well. He went without reply then to the wall and felt for the roughness which was the mark of the hiding place, and he removed the clod of earth. Behind it he fumbled among the little heap of silver, and he counted out 9 pieces.
"Why are you taking the silver out?" said his wife suddenly in the darkness.
"I am compelled to lend it to my uncle," he replied shortly. His wife answered nothing at first, and then she said in her plain heavy way,
"It is better not to say lend. There is no lending in that house. There is only giving."
"Well, I know that," replied Wang Lung with bitterness. "It is cutting my flesh out to give to him, and for nothing except that we are of a blood."
Then going out into the threshold, he thrust the money at his uncle, and he walked quickly back to the field, and there he fell to working as though he would tear the earth from its foundations. He thought for the time only of the silver. He saw it poured out carelessly upon a gambling table, saw it swept up by some idle hand. His silver, the silver he had so painfully collected from the fruits of his fields, to turn it back again for more earth for his own. It was evening before his anger was spent, and he straightened himself and remembered his home and his food. And then he thought of that new mouth, come that day into his house, and it struck him with heaviness that the birth of daughters had begun for him. Daughters who do not belong to their parents, but are born and reared for other families. He had not even thought in his anger at his uncle to stop and see the face of this small new creature. He stood leaning upon his hoe, and he was seized with sadness. It would be another harvest before he could buy that land now, a piece adjoining the one he had, and there was this new mouth in the house. Across the pale oyster-colored sky of twilight, a flock of crows flew, sharply black, and whirred over him, cawing loudly. He watched them disappear like a cloud into the trees about his house, and he ran at them, shouting and shaking his hoe. They rose again slowly, circling and recircling over his head, mocking him with their cries, and they flew at last into the darkening sky. He groaned aloud. It was an evil omen.
8. It seemed as though once the gods turn against a man, they will not consider him again. The rains, which should have come in early summer, withheld themselves, and day after day the sky shone with fresh and careless brilliance. The parched and starving earth was nothing to them. From dawn to dawn there was not a cloud, and at night the stars hung out of the sky, golden and cruel in their beauty. The fields, although Wang Lung cultivated them desperately, dried and cracked, and the young wheat stalks, which had sprung up courageously with the coming of spring and had prepared their heads for the grain, when they found nothing coming from the soil or the sky for them, ceased their growing, and stood motionless at first under the sun, and at last dwindled and yellowed into a barren harvest. The young rice beds, which Wang Lung sowed, at first were squares of jade upon the brown earth. He carried water to them day after day after he had given up the wheat, the heavy wooden buckets slung upon a bamboo pole across his shoulders. But though a furrow grew upon his flesh and a callus formed there as large as a bowl, no rain came. At last, the water in the pond dried into a cake of clay,
and the water even in the well sunk so low that Olan said to him, "If the children must drink and the old man have his hot water, the plants must go dry." Wang Long answered with anger that broke into a sob,
"Well, and they must all starve if the plants starve."
It was true that all their lives depended upon the earth. Only the piece of land by the moat bore harvest, and this because, at last, when summer wore away without rain, Wang